Hello and welcome to this new edition of Viewpoints. Boris Hassan here with you for the next half hour. On today's show, the Quebec government will impose major hikes in tuition fees for out-of-province and international students wishing to study at English universities. Some will pay more than double in 2024.
This is not a measure against Anglophones, and I want to be clear on that. It's not a measure. I'm not closing the doors to any Anglophone students who want to come to McGill or Concordia or Bishop. They will be able to come. It's just that we're not ready to continue funding that kind of policy, funding $110 million for students that mostly are not staying here.
Mustard Seed opens 40 new shelter spaces for Calgary women with the help of new government funding. In Newfoundland and Labrador, the government lays out its plans to improve availability and construction of housing in the province.
It's a response to a growing housing crisis that's happening across the country. We think this is a package that helps deal with some of the immediate needs.
Food insecurity is growing at an alarming rate in northern BC. Some food banks have observed a 25% hike in demand over the past 12 months.
They come in emotional because they would say, for years, I supported you guys, and I can't believe I'm in the place now where I need to come in and get help from you.
And Meta and Google are making life difficult for the campus and community radio sector. That's us. This and more on Viewpoints.
Local news nationwide.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
Welcome to you all. Thanks for keeping us company. First, we're off to the province of Quebec, where the Coalition Avenir Québec government announced it will double tuition fees for out-of-province students starting next fall. The announcement on October 13 by Minister of Higher Education Pascal Derry and Minister of French Language Jean-François Roberge made news across Canada and internationally. Incoming students in undergraduate and professional master's programs currently pay around $9,000 per year. That will go up roughly to $17,000. International students will also face a hefty increase. The minimum tuition fees will be set at $20,000 per year. Derry and Roberge argue that Quebec taxpayers have subsidized this mostly Anglophone student base for too long. The minister said the $100 million saved will be reinvested in the French network to, quote, rebalance English and French higher education. They also argue that the measure will help to preserve the French language in Quebec. For English language universities, McGill, Concordia, and Bishops, this news really stings. More with Jules Bugiel in Montreal.
The CAG government is doubling tuition fees for out-of-province students in a move ministers say will rebalance English and French higher ed. Speaking in Montreal on Friday, Minister of Higher Education Pascal Derry and Minister of the French Language Jean-François Roberge said Quebec taxpayers have subsidized Anglophone students for too long. Here's Pascal Derry.
Listen, this is a choice we've made here, a policy that we just want to stop funding because obviously it costs the government of Quebec and the taxpayers of Quebec a very high amount of money for students who come here and who don't stay here. And like I said, in the context of a workforce shortage, I think we need to make sure that these students stay here. So a majority...
Starting next fall, the CAQ is upping base tuition fees for incoming students in undergraduate and professional master's programs. Currently, the minimum student's pay is just under $9,000 per year. That'll go up to roughly $17,000. Ministers say this change reflects the amount each student costs the government. They didn't specify whether that amount factors in the economic benefits these students bring to Quebec. When asked for numbers on just how many students do or don't stay in the province, Delhi admitted the government didn't have the figures. It's unclear whether they know the number of Francophone students who stay or leave following their degrees either.
So it's very difficult to have a numbers, but nobody is going to contradict what I'm saying today. And obviously it comes also from the English universities. I mean, I've been sitting down with the Anglophone University since the beginning of the mandate, and nobody tells me that these students don't go back. Very hard to follow up after they graduate, but we know, and all of us know, that a vast majority of these students go back to their province to work.
The higher education minister said the roughly $100 million the government is looking to recoup each year will be reinvested into French institutions to end an imbalance between French and English universities. Though she didn't give details on what form those investments will take.
Je vous donnerai pas un chiffre précis parce qu'on est encore à des estimations quand même préliminaires, puis je veux pas induire personne en erreur, mais on va quand même aller chercher minimalement plus de 110 millions de dollars pour le réinvestir dans le réseau francophone par la suite. Those policies or those measures or this new tarification model will inevitably help us to reinforce and to have a certain progression in the number of Francophone students in our Francophone network.
She also claimed out-of-province students have benefited from lower fees in Quebec than in the rest of Canada.
De l'autre côté, un Canadien qui vient étudier ici peut voir ses droits de scolarité substantiellement réduits selon son programme.
But data from Statistics Canada pegs the average undergrad tuition at just over $7,000, $2,000 less than the minimum that out-of-province students currently pay in Quebec. The minister didn't give estimates for the fee increases international students will face, but said that they too will have to shell out more to study in the province. Students already in the system, as well as those from France, Belgium, and any other countries with special funding agreements, will be exempt. Delhi said that more such agreements could be on the horizon. According to the ministers, the change is a response to the decline of the French language. Here's Minister Roberge.
We see the data. It's obvious that the French is going the wrong side in Quebec and in Montreal. Those are facts coming by the federal government.
Census data released last year showed that from 2016 to 2021, Quebec residents whose first official language was English rose by only 1 percentage point. The decline in French spoken at home in that same time frame was just 2.5 percentage points. Pascal Delry didn't have an answer when asked about whether the government has planned for the effects these changes will have on the housing market as wealthy students come into the province. And when asked why the government is choosing to penalize Anglophones rather than encouraging them to learn French, Delhi denied that's what they're doing, said they're open to incentives for language learning in the future.
We're not closing the door to any. This is not a measure against Anglophones, and I want to be clear on that. It's not a measure. I'm not closing the doors to any Anglophone students who want to come to McGill or Concordia or Bishop. They will be able to come. It's just that we're not ready to continue funding that kind of policy, funding $110 million for students that mostly are not staying here.
But what do students think? McGill undergrad Rahad Medwali says it can be difficult for students in Anglophone bubbles to learn French. She says she would welcome greater government support.
So, like, learning the language was actually one of the reasons why I wanted to move to Montreal and, like, go to McGill. But I feel like the McGill bubble makes it kind of hard to learn the language. So although it's definitely one of my aspirations, just because, like, so much is going on and you have school and stuff and, like, everyone around you is English or can speak English, it makes it a lot harder to learn the language. Like, I don't know why they're, like, deterring people away. I don't really understand that. Definitely, like, if they provided initiatives that further encourage students to learn the language, like, personally, I would take part in them. I feel like a lot of other people would as well.
As a current student, the tuition hike won't affect her. But Medvali says it would have made her think twice about choosing McGill as a high school student in Toronto.
Like, Ontario schools are a lot cheaper, and there's a lot of good Ontario schools. So even though, like, I would have wanted to go to McGill, I feel like maybe, like, it's so expensive, or it would have been so expensive. Like, I don't think I would have.
Lucien Louvet is a French citizen, so wouldn't be affected by the tuition hike. But Louvet isn't looking forward to the changes this might have on campus life nonetheless.
I think it would affect really the campus population in terms of the students who are able to come here. There's already a lot of people from Montreal, but I feel like the population would drastically change in terms of they would be like a lot more well-off people, maybe a lot of more white people who come from more privileged backgrounds. It would really affect the diversity of the school. Yeah, I don't think it's a good idea.
Like Concordia and Bishop's, the other two universities most affected by the change, McGill thinks the fee hikes are a bad idea too. When reached for comment on Thursday, They said, "We are concerned that changes to tuition for international students and those coming from other Canadian provinces could have a serious impact on McGill's ability to attract and retain the talent that contributes so significantly to Quebec's economy and provide our businesses with the highly qualified personnel they so desperately need. Montreal is known internationally as one of the world's great education destinations, as demonstrated by Montreal's consistent placement in the QS Best Student Cities ranking. Whether or not they remain in Quebec after graduation, students from outside Quebec make an enormous contribution to the vitality and economy of Quebec and Montreal." I'm Jules Bijel. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Kareem Mosnay in Kingston, Ontario. You are tuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca.
The government of Alberta is investing over $762,000 to open 40 new shelter spaces for vulnerable women in Calgary through the Mustard Seed. The Mustard Seed is an organization that provides care for people experiencing poverty and homelessness. The new spaces have been available since October 16. The new shelter spaces will provide 24/7 support to women, according to Samantha Lowe, Senior Director of Shelter Operations at the Mustard Seed from Edmonton. Here's Ryan Hunt.
The Mustard Seed announced that they will be opening shelter spaces to accommodate women for the winter months. These spaces have been funded by the Alberta government and are already opened and ready for service. Jason Nixon, the Minister of Seniors, Community and Social Services, spoke in a press conference and gave some numbers and went in depth about the announcement.
Today, I'm excited to announce with the Mustard Seed that they will open up 40 women-only emergency shelter spaces funded by the province of Alberta. These are exciting ways for us to be able to accomplish some of the unique work that organizations are doing.
Mayor Jyoti Gondek offered her remarks as well, mentioning how important these types of shelters are in Calgary.
This is absolutely critical work. We've got so many people in positions of vulnerability in our city. Having 40 extra spaces for women who are finding themselves in a crisis situation, this is absolutely the work we need to be doing. So this announcement today is important for those women and any others who find themselves in a situation where they need emergency shelter. I'm very happy that we are doing this work.
Samantha Lowe, the Senior Director of Shelter Operations at the Mustard Seed, said that her shelter is fully committed to make sure that all of the women who come through the Mustard Seed have the appropriate resources and safety.
Our new 24/7 shelter is poised to provide women-specific services thoughtfully designed to cater to the unique needs of this demographic. From helping with system navigation to offering housing case management and counseling, we are committed to providing comprehensive wraparound supports to these women.
I'm Ryan Hunt.
Abakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoints.
Food insecurity is reaching alarming rates in northern BC. The Prince Rupert Salvation Army Soup Kitchen has seen a 25% increase in usage by the community since 2022, according to Captain Geoff Butt. This is consistent with trends in communities across Canada, where the problem has been growing steadily. In 2002, the province of Quebec developed Canada's first poverty reduction strategy. Since then, some provinces, territories, and the federal government have followed suit with plans of their own. Now in 2023, as Canada is faced with a new set of poverty and food insecurity challenges, Food Banks Canada is introducing the country's first comprehensive poverty report to capture the nuances of provincial, territorial, and federal perspectives in one place. In Smithers, British Columbia, Pamela Hassan spoke to Captain Geoff Butt, who manages the Prince Rupert Salvation Army, where he has worked for the past 12 years.
I have been, not just here in Prince Rupert, but I have been, you know, working with the Salvation Army for close to 10, 12 years now, in my capacity as the officer, but also in other capacities, dealing with our needs that we meet. There's definitely an uptick, certainly a shift. We know that food pricing is, you know, out of control, and that we've seen just this year alone so far, I've seen an increase of about 25%. I'm a bit of an analysis junkie at heart. So I like to crunch numbers and that. So yeah, it's about 25% increase in this year alone, which creates kind of a double problem because we, the food donations and money that we receive for the food bank has decreased because by about half so far as we get into now prepping for Christmas, because we also do come Christmas time, not only extra food for people because, you know, it's Christmas time, but also we do toys for kids, we do toys for about 800 kids in the area. That has been kind of halved so far. Now it's still early. It's only October, but yeah, I'm getting a little nervous, let's say.
And when you said about that 25% increase, do you mean since last year or since you began 10 years ago?
No, since last year.
So
that's a 25 increase from 22 to 23. Yeah.
So far. Yeah. I guess it's kind of anecdotal, but you're also involved in community services. So aside from the rising grocery costs, the price of food, what else do you attribute to this rise in people needing the services?
Yeah, I've given that a lot of thought and, you know, looked at different things. I mean, lots of times you'll have groups or you'd see on the news where people are saying that this is a contributing factor. It's like, well, I could have told you that ages ago because, you know, that's where I live. This is my everyday. But certainly what I've seen and is a very disturbing trend is what we would say are working poor. There was a time not too long ago, like I go back in my years in this field, there was a time when you could work a job full-time, part-time. You're not going to be wealthy, but you're going to be able to get by. But I certainly see a lot of people come in my doors who what we call working poor. There are people who are not homeless. It's not addiction issues. It's people that despite them putting in years somewhere, the wages of what they make plus the cost of living for their rent or their mortgages, they need any help they can get. They get groceries. I have lots of times on occasion encounter people who are upset. They come in emotional because they would say, you know, for years I supported you guys and I can't believe I'm in the place now where I need to come in and get help from you. I've always helped you and now I need to get help. And it's just, they're emotional about it. And I usually just try to put back to them like some sense of comfort to say, you know, unfortunately, you're not the only person in the situation. That's not the first time I've heard that story. So I'm not an economist. That's not my background. I'm not one who understands these problems. My role is to help alleviate some of the stress of this through food insecurities in my role here in Prince Rupert. And certainly when it comes to food services like food banks or soup kitchens like we have here, certainly the stigma that it's for people who are homeless, unemployed, that sort of thing. That's not the case. And that's why it's important to have these conversations and help shed some light on and inform people about the truth of the matter. Think about people who are on a disability income. Think about people who are on seniors' incomes, these fixed incomes. They haven't reflected the cost of living, the cost of groceries for them. Things like gas going up, things, you know, their rent or their mortgages or the cost of groceries. People that are still on fixed incomes, it hasn't really reflected the change. So if you go back to when food banks began as kind of a regular staple, I mean, you're talking about the Jean Chrétien years, it was, you know, broadcasted as a temporary measure during, you know, harder economic times. But you go from British Columbia to Newfoundland, you will find food banks still existing. And I would wager, not that I'm in a conversation with people in, say, Ontario, I'm sure they see an increase as well. It's not that it was a temporary measure. It has become a regular fixture in a country that's considered to be one of the wealthiest countries in the world. Food insecurity is a real problem that needs real attention today.
Well, thank you so much for giving me all this time today to help shed some light on the operations of the Prince Rupert Salvation Army.
Yeah, no problem. Great. It was great to have the opportunity to let everyone know what we're doing.
Pamela Hassan also spoke with Lara Neeson, the Community Ministries Director for the Skeena-Buckley Valley Circuit of the Salvation Army. That conversation can be found on canada-info.ca. And now across the country to Newfoundland and Labrador, where the government announced in mid-October a five-point plan to increase the availability of affordable housing in the province. The goal is to stimulate private sector development and to reduce housing prices. Through targeted actions valued at more than $65 million, there should be upwards of 500 new housing options added to the market if all goes according to plan. Here's Tanya Organ in Cornerbrook, Newfoundland.
Government has introduced a five-point plan designed to increase the availability of affordable housing by helping stimulate private sector development and reduce housing prices. Through the targeted actions valued at more than $65 million, there will be upwards of 500 new housing options added to the market. New initiatives include the removal of the GHT HST, a new purpose-built rental housing, a low-interest financing program, and use of available provincial government-owned land and buildings for construction or conversion for purpose-built rental housing. Premier Andrew Fury says this will help ease the uncertainty for developers.
In particular with the interest rates, and then therefore change the business model to make it more appealing. As to why it has never happened in the past, Frankly, I don't think there's been this supply-demand. I've struggled as Premier wondering why this is, sure, it's a complete and complex social issue with numerous different inputs, but is also an incredible development opportunity, and why haven't developers seized this moment to do just exactly that? Like, you look at downtown Halifax, there's been an incredible increase in vertical living in downtown Halifax over the last 5 to 10 years. We have not really seen that develop here in Newfoundland and Labrador.
Other initiatives include a home ownership assistance program for first-time home buyers with lower to moderate incomes who qualify for a mortgage to access the required down payment to purchase a home. The program will also assist with closing costs of up to $1,500. Also, a secondary and basement suite incentive, which will be a pilot project, will provide homeowners with access to a forgivable loan of 50% of the cost of renovations, up to a maximum of $40,000 over 5 years. Fury says this is in addition to the extra $3 million announced yesterday to repair and renovate approximately 143 vacant Newfoundland Labrador Housing Corporation units.
It's a response to a growing housing crisis that's happening across the country. We think this is a package that helps deal with some of the immediate needs, whether that's in the 750 or the 850 or the 143. All of those things will help with the immediate need, but if we just stop there, that would be an acute response. We are planning medium and long-term response to what is a growing and changing population of Newfoundland and Labrador to help mitigate the need for a future acute response.
More than 750 new public housing options have been advanced over the last 2 years. I'm Tanya Organ.
This is Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You're attuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca.
And finally, on to a problem that is affecting campus and community radio stations across Canada, including the one you're listening to right now. The impact of Meta's news embargo on the Canadian community radio sector is being felt across the country. Anybody who uses Facebook or Instagram has noticed the disappearance of Canadian news from those platforms. The bill known as the Online News Act became law in June 2023, and is on track to come into full force in December 2023. The bill seeks to impose fees on large social media and search engine companies like Meta and Google for allowing Canadian-created news content to be shared as links on their platforms, in effect charging the internet companies for republishing content. Many community radio stations have started to see the full effect of Facebook's restrictions in August and September, as well as on other Meta platforms, primarily Instagram. Google has said that they will implement their reaction to C18 in December with the delisting of news from the platform. Many media organizations across the country have invested significant resources to build up a large social media following and used social media as an intricate part of their fundraising operations and for engagement with their listeners. Journalist Dan Keller, who works in Ontario for Radio Waterloo CKMS, wanted to know how the sector is adapting to the changing environment. Keller spoke to CKMS Radio President Nat Persaud, the station's editor Bob Junkman, and also with Barry Rook, the executive director of the National Campus and Community Radio Association. Here's a short excerpt from Dan Keller's half-hour report.
First of all, and we'll speak to the news element of things, is news is shared across the platform. It still is in its own way. There's just sort of some techniques which people have been trying to sneak news and information in. What Meta is calling news sort of is slightly different than what the government of Canada views news as. And we can talk about how that got into play if we want to at some point. But when that type of like hard breaking local civic news is not being shared, it obviously has a direct impact on the viewers and the listeners, because they have to specifically change their platform and their process to capture news. So this is especially troublesome for the age groups that tend to be using social media, which in many cases, even in more senior-based communities, are Facebook. There's a lack of information. That's what we've always been pushing. The challenge is the other areas, the ability to get information about the station and the community events, what's happening in the area that's not directly tied to like news, but things that are going on or around. Those are being lost. So there's less connections being made. We also have lost the ability to promote content that goes on the air. So how do you know when a new show is coming out or a special guest is there, etc.? So we've lost the ability to share that really interesting, deep information that the stations are doing. Then you've got volunteerism. Social media has been a huge draw and way to be able to capture interest in joining a radio station. As you know, the station is an open space where people can come to learn about media and radio and not-for-profit management and event planning and all of these types of things. Because the stations don't have the ability to reach out and inform their audience, whether it's active with them or new people who are discovering you, you're losing the opportunity to find volunteers. All of that kind of got tossed out the window, and stations have had to pivot to figuring out, well, how do we get this information across? And it did become a lot of talking to those who are using their own personal profile pages to get the message out that your station needs help.
Please note that Barry Rook of the NCRA also discusses the local journalism initiative during that half-hour radio program. Barry is also a non-voting board member on the Community Radio Fund of Canada, which produces this program. And Dan Keller, the reporter who produced the story, is paid under the local journalism initiative through CKMS Radio. And we here at Viewpoints are also funded through the LGI program. For more on this story, please tune in to canada-info.ca. So that's it for us at Viewpoints. A warm welcome to one of our most recent journalists, Tanya Organ, working out of Newfoundland and Labrador. She's been producing stories on The Rock for a while now, but this is her first appearance on Viewpoints. Welcome to you, Tanya. Thanks also to Jules Bugiel, Ryan Hunt, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Keller, national coordinators Maureen McEwen and Victoria Fenner. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and your local radio station. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassin. Thanks so much for lending us your listening ears. Have a great week, and until the next, ciao.
at canada-info.ca.